Welcome to the James River Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from David Lindell, West Campus Pastor at James River Church. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
We're going to spend just a few moments opening the Word of God tonight before we then position ourselves in the altar to spend some time seeking the Lord. And tonight I want to take you to Psalm chapter 121, Psalm 121. And as you make your way there, who has a morning routine, like certified morning routine, same thing every day? About half. The other half are kind of like, maybe. One of our morning routines, and so on a weekday, like I take Owen to school, and Owen has got the earliest start time, so I take him to school, and as I'm pulling out of the driveway, almost inevitably, what he wants to do is he wants to pull out in such a way, he wants to roll, so he can roll down his window, and then the other three children, Calvin has to be carried, he can't walk yet, the other three children come out, and then he says, he waves goodbye to all of them. And it's super cute and it's really fun, but we have a window in the front door in the house. Our house actually faces east, and so Henley and Elliot, if Elliot's awake, he's our sleep in guy. If he's awake, he's out there. But sometimes it's just Henley, and so she'll come to the front door. She'll watch Owen go, and you know, only in the last couple of weeks has it been to where the sun is already up, but a lot of times through the spring, she's watching the sun come up out the front door. And so a couple, you know, 3, 4, or 5 weeks ago, I lose track of time. But if you ask Becky, she'll know the exact date that this happened. She and Henley are standing at the front door. In fact, Boo, can you come over here? Come over here. She wore her rain boots. Look at those. You did a good job. Oh, so she doesn't. Anyway, so she and mommy are standing at the front door, and she starts to ask some scientific questions just about, you know, the sun. And so she's asking, okay, what is the, you know, where does the sun come from? And so Becky's trying to help her process a little bit. The sun, you know, it rises in the east and it sets in the west. So through the day, you kind of see it traveling through the sky from east to west. And so Boo had a very great, this is Boo, had a really good question. She said, does, when the sun travels from east to west, does its mama travel with it? Because why would you want to go anywhere without your mama? Somebody's like, amen to that. Does its mama go with it? And Becky said, you know, actually the sun doesn't have a mama. She's paused. No mama? Poor son. That was super cute. I love you. I thank you for coming up here with me. That was a great illustration. I appreciate that. So that was a massive victory right there, even that she would come up with me. Where does the sun come from? That question, where does it come from? And I actually, as I'm reading Psalm 121, I'm thinking that about the psalmist, kind of maybe his front door didn't have a window in it. Maybe he was sitting on, you know, he was looking out the mouth of a cave to the east, looking at mountains or hills in front of him. Perhaps he was watching the sun come up, and he's processing what's going on in his own life. At sunrise, he's thinking about the situations he's facing and what he's encountering. And in Psalm 121, verse 1, the psalmist says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? When you read ancient Near Eastern literature, one of the things that you find out is that the hills or mountains, we think of them like that would be a great view. Like if you have a mountain view, if you have a cabin in the mountains and you get a look out at the mountains, that is awesome. So we think peaceful, serene, calm, that imagery is really good. That's good imagery to us. Like you should have a Thomas Kincaid painting of mountains and it should say, where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord. But in the ancient Near Eastern mind and in the poetry that David is penning, mountains are synonymous with turmoil or the enemy. Because mountains are places. You're traveling through the mountains, the terrain is dangerous. There's bandits in the mountains that are easily able to hide and attack from vantage points that you wouldn't see them. Enemies often approach out of the mountains and come down from the mountains. And so David is looking at the mountains, and the mountains, some scholars believe that David is actually thinking about the mountains. He's looking at a mountain range, and he's thinking about the attack of the enemy. There are other scholars who say, well, maybe it's not the case, since we don't have a specific instance in history that this psalm is tied to. Maybe the issue is that as he looks at the mountains for him are a metaphor of the trouble that he's facing, a metaphor for the challenge that he's looking at. And out in the morning as he gets up and he sees the sun rising over the mountains, overwhelmed by anxiety, overwhelmed by stress, overwhelmed by the intensity of what he's facing and his desperation for an answer to the need that he has, he pens these words. I lift up my eyes to the hills, where does my help come from? Now, notice something about this opening verse. It's not a statement. Maybe some of you have heard this, like, I lift up my eyes to the hills where my help comes from. Your help doesn't come from the hills. That's not what the psalmist is saying. It's, I lift up my eyes to the hills, where does my help come from? Question mark. Where does it come from? I'm facing this problem. I see the problem in front of me. And the question that wells up within me is that in the midst of the problem, in the midst when I'm looking out at the mountain and the enemy is coming down the mountain and the turmoil is right in front of me and the anxiety is welling up and the stress is mounting, in that scenario, in that situation, where does my help come from? And it's out of that pondering and the question that the psalmist asked that his confidence wells up. He says, in the midst of this danger, verse 2, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. His confidence for his situation is fueled by four truths that I want to show you through this passage before we spend some time on the altar. And the first truth that his confidence is fueled by is God's creative power is in God's creative power in front of him or in front of me or in front of you. The first thing that fuels our confidence in God's help in our situation is God's creative power in front of me. I love what Charles Haddon Spurgeon wrote about this psalm. He said, what we need is help. Help powerful, efficient, constant. We need a very present help in trouble. What a mercy that we have it in our God. What a mercy that we have it in our God. What we need is help that is efficient, powerful, and constant, and we have it in our Creator God. You know, one of the things that I think about this first truth that the psalmist articulates and he vocalizes in this psalm is that when we hear verse 2 read, my help comes from the Lord, the Creator of heaven and earth. Initially, when I read that, and when I read it today, this morning, I was thinking, okay, you know, you ponder what God did in creating, and that's certainly amazing. That's certainly astounding. You know, God created the heavens, God created the earth, God created everything you see out of nothing. He created everything. And so how capable and how powerful is he able to work in your situation? That's certainly part of the equation. But the other part of the equation is this, that we need to be reminded that the Creator God has everything that he created at his disposal to meet the need of his child. And there is nothing that God has created, nothing in all of creation, that he wouldn't dispose of to meet the need of his child. There is nothing so precious to God in all of his creation that he would not willingly give it to you to meet your need. That's how good he is. That's how generous he is. That's how kind he is. The psalmist says, I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who created heaven and earth and who would take any part of that creation and put it at my disposal if it suited his purpose and his will to do good in my life. I can trust him in that. He is the creator God, and out of his infinite creative power, he's able to supply exactly what I need. Though, the second truth, though, that we see here is God's eyes are on me. God's eyes are on me. Not only is his creative power in front of me, that when I witness all of creation, all of a sudden confidence wells up in me, but his eyes are on me. The psalmist says this in verse 3. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. He will not let your foot be moved. This is the promise of preservation. In other words, the floor does not have permission to drop from out from under you. Doesn't. The rug does not have permission to be pulled out from under you. Yet the reality is there can be times where we feel like that's happening. The reality is there are times where your experience says the floor is dropping out and the rug is being pulled out. And the key in the midst of those situations, when you feel that is happening, is to keep your eyes open, because what you're going to see is that your God preserves you even when you feel like that is taking place. This is the promise of preservation. That his eye is on you. And the psalmist says he is attentive. You know, we can be prone to think that God gets tired. I mean, we know theologically that God doesn't get tired. Like, we know God doesn't sleep, God doesn't get tired. I get that theologically. But we can be tempted to think that God gets tired of us personally. He doesn't get tired of me theologically. Well, that's good. But he might get tired of me personally. I might be too needy. He might have heard this prayer request one too many times. And not that he's going to shut you off, but you kind of, I think at times we can be praying for something. We can be seeking God for something. We can be asking him to do a work in our lives, do a work in our bodies, do a work in our families. And we've got this mental image of God, like a friend in a conversation who's kind of just, you know, out to coffee with you. And they're kind of, their podium is going down. And they're just sitting there, and all of a sudden you're pouring your heart out to them. And all of a sudden you say, you see what I'm saying? Am I like on the right track with all this? And they go, oh, I'm sorry, were you saying something? I was just like way over there. I was just like looking at that car, looking out the window. Like, they've lost track of what you're saying. It seems like they've lost interest. God doesn't do that. God doesn't do that. God is not tired of your story. God is not tired of your pain. God is not tired of your request. God is not tired of your longing. God is not tired of your processing. God is not tired of your questions. He's not tired of you. He's not theologically tired, and he is not personally tired. He is in the business of preservation, and that means he is attentive to the cry of his children. Psalm chapter 34, verse 15, what does it say? The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. His ears are attentive to their cry. He is listening. He's paying attention. He's not daydreaming. He's not worn out by you. But then also notice this. He won't let you stumble. Your guardian, God, won't fall asleep. Not on your life. Israel's guardian will never doze nor sleep. You think about him as a guardian. You know, as a parent, one of the fun things when you have little kids never think that you wouldn't want to be with them. You know, like, they come and wake you up early in the morning and say, are you ready to play outside? Because they anticipate that you're going to say yes. Why wouldn't you say yes? It's them. It's outside. It's good times. They come to you at 3 in the morning for a cracker. They don't anticipate that you wouldn't want to get them a cracker, nor that you were in deep sleep and suddenly they are arousing you from that. That doesn't enter their mind. It's just like, I have to go to the bathroom. I need a cracker. I need a glass of water. You're my dad. You'll get it for me, right? Right? Awesome. Let's go hang out in the kitchen. God is the perfect guardian. He's the perfect father. He doesn't slumber or sleep. It's not just that he doesn't fall asleep, that he's literally at the ready. That are when you envision your child coming to you with the expectation that you would want to hang out with them at 3 a.m., God actually wants to hang out with you at 3 a.m. That's who he is. He wants to do that. He wants you to lay your heart out to him. He wants you to call out to him. That's who he is. He's the perfect guardian. He's the perfect father. And he will always meet your expectation of longing for intimacy, relationship, communion, and your longing to see him meet your need. He'll always meet that. He will not just match your excitement to talk to him. He'll exceed it to talk to you. He'll exceed it. He's more excited to talk to you. He's more excited to meet your need than you are passionate about calling out to him about your need. He doesn't slumber or sleep. His eyes are on you. His creative power is at your disposal. But not only that, the third truth we see, jumping a little bit ahead, God's presence is with me. God's presence is with me. Not only is his creativity in front of me, not only are his eyes on me, but his presence is with me. Verse 5, the Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. Now, the word keeper is an interesting word. It's this word, this Hebrew word, shalom, and it actually occurs 5 or 6 times in this chapter, and it's used to speak of being on guard. In fact, if you go to, I think it's 1 Kings 14, it talks about Rehoboam's bodyguards. They're stationed outside his chamber. It's this word shalom. They're on the ready. They're his personal security detail. God surrounds you. No doubt you are surrounded by angels. No doubt the angels of the Lord encamp around the righteous. That's what the Bible says. But beyond just angels, God doesn't just say, I'm going to delegate a few angels to go hang out with Brad. Now, I'm going to go delegate a few angels. I know Mark's at the hospital a lot. He's on the road a lot, seeing people a lot, you know, putting a lot of miles on the car. I'm going to delegate a few angels to hang out with Mark. No, every single one of us, God is omnipresent, meaning he can be the personal security detail for every single one of his children, and that's exactly what his word says, that he is your shield, that he keeps you from danger by day and by night, that God sets a hedge of protection around you, and he doesn't just delegate that. Oh, angels reinforce him. Angels take up the rear and take up the front, but he is with you. He is right by your side. The presence of the Lord is with you, and it doesn't mean you won't experience trouble. Doesn't mean you won't experience turmoil. In fact, the guy who's writing this psalm was public enemy number one for a very long season in his life. The reality is, though, what he's saying is there may be things that bruise you, but nothing will break you. You may encounter things that are difficult, hard, and challenging, but they will not ruin you because I will not permit them to do that. Why? Because his presence is with me. He sets a guard around me. He is my personal security detail. He's always with me, no matter where I go, no matter what I'm encountering, no matter the trouble that I'm walking through. God's presence is with me, but here is the fourth truth. God's care surrounds me. Verse 7. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in. From this time forth and forevermore. I think it's good for every one of us to remember that God's help is not just available to us when we need help. That he is keeping your going out and your coming in. What the psalmist is saying, like all the like small details that make up your days, God is keenly interested not only in those details, but in surrounding those details with his care. That the little things, the little meeting on your calendar, the thing that you don't pay attention to, the thing that happens every Tuesday, the meeting that happens monthly, God cares about that. He sees that. He knows you. He's interested in the details of your life, and he is watching over them. In fact, you know, honestly, it's a little bit hard to decide which part of verse 8 is more encouraging, because the psalmist says he does that right now, and he does that forevermore, and the team can come up. He does it right now, and he does it forevermore. In this moment, he cares about you. In this moment, he is surrounding you with his care. But the psalmist says he doesn't just do it right now. The truth that in addition to that needs to fuel your faith and your expectancy that he's going to help you is that he's going to do that forever. There will never be a time, there will never be a season, there will never be a day in your future and all your life when in which his care will not surround you. So the psalmist says. But when you go through this psalm, you read all of these encouraging things that fuel your confidence that God is going to help you. His creative power is in front of me. His eyes are on me. His presence is with me. His care surrounds me. You see, the psalmist knew all of that before the problem ever hit, before the help was ever needed. He knew all of that. This isn't new to him. It's not new details, not new information. What you need to pay attention to, what I need to pay attention to, is what happens in verse 1. There are three things that happen in verse 1 that I think in a lot of people's lives across this room need to happen tonight. What does it say in verse 1? He says, I lift up my eyes. What is he doing when he lifts up his eyes? I lift up my eyes to the hills. He's surveying the problem. He's surveying the need. He's surveying the desperate nature of his situation. And unfortunately, a lot of us stop right there. I lift up my eyes to the hills, and I see a lot of problem. I see a lot of heartache. I see a lot of stress. I see a lot of anxiety. I see a lot of things that I can't handle on my own. I see a lot of things that I have no idea how that will get resolved, get taken care of. I don't know what to do with all of that. And so either we shove it and we just say, well, just keep living life. Or we have the option that the psalmist takes. I lift up my eyes to the hills, and the next step is we ask the question. What am I going to do with this? You see, the good thing about asking the question is it forces us to kind of enter into the difficulty in the situation and really weigh out our options. Because when you look at the difficulty that you're facing, no matter how big it is, no matter how nasty the situation is, no matter how at a loss you are to deal with it, the good news is when you ask yourself the question, where does my help come from? The bigger the situation, the nastier the problem, the darker the day, the more you come to the conclusion, my help has got to come from the Lord. It's got to come from Him. But often, as a coping mechanism, we try to minimize the nature of the situation, or we try to think of ways, people who could possibly help us with the situation, instead of going, no, this is as big as it is. This is huge. I don't even know what to do with this. What am I going to do with it? I'm going to look to Him. My help has got to come from the Lord. I don't even know where else to turn. I don't even know where else to look, because when I analyze this problem, He's the only one in the world who could solve it. And then the good news is, when you get to that place, my help's got to come from the Lord, then all of a sudden, His power, His sufficiency, His readiness begins to flood your heart to remember, oh yeah, He's more than able to accomplish all that concerns me. More than able. He's more than able to accomplish every single thing that concerns you.